to the history of Little Europe. Addendum, Liechtenstein. Well, I'm back. As you can probably guess from the title, this is going to be one big episode on the history of Liechtenstein, covering the whole thing. To my mind, the nation has enough going on that it's an interesting little microcosm of Europe, but its size really doesn't warrant a full series. So where better to put it than as the junior partner to Switzerland? To begin, we've actually done a lot of the legwork for this already. Liechtenstein, like Switzerland, has some brief flashes of civilization in the Bronze Age, but really enters the scene as, would you believe it, part of the territory the Helvetians controlled. As you might expect, the results were exactly the same. Julius Caesar, Roman ambition, annexed by the Empire. The area would be finally consolidated and annexed under Tiberius, the son of Augustus, several years later, and thus it began its several hundred years at one of the most turbulent borders in the world. For our case, the border conflict was mostly to be found as a result of the Alemanni. Remember them? They're going to spend the next few centuries or so raiding through this land, on and off marching into Italy. As a result, Liechtenstein was one of the first territories to go following the collapse of the Roman Empire. In the early Middle Ages, once they had settled down a little, the Alemanni drew up their borders in the eastern Swiss plateau by the 5th century, with Liechtenstein located at the eastern edge. There, they would enjoy about a century of peaceful irrelevance, until, in the 6th century, the entire region became part of the Frankish Empire, following Clovis I's victory over the Alemanni at Tolbiac in 504. The area that later became Liechtenstein remained under Frankish hegemony through both the Merovingian and Carolingian dynasties, until the empire was divided by the Treaty of Verdun in 843 AD. The territory of present-day Liechtenstein was put under the possession of East Francia. It would remain that way until the conquests of Otto I began the establishment of what would become known as the Holy Roman Empire. During this time, until about 1100, the predominant language of the area was Romanche, that strange combination of Latin with the Proto-Germanic languages of the Alps. But as they were further integrated into the empire, German began to gain ground in the territory. In 1300, the first major city in the region was established by a migration of an Alemannic population, who originated in the Valais and founded the modern village of Triensburg. By 1200, the Swiss plateau would be the site of the games of dominions between the houses of Savoy, Zeringer, Habsburg, and Kyburg. When the Kyburg dynasty fell in 1264, the Habsburgs, under King Rudolf I, later the Holy Roman Emperor, extended their territory to the eastern Alpine plateau that included the territory of Liechtenstein. In 1396, Vaduz, the southern region of Liechtenstein, gained imperial immediacy, that strange trait granted to the Swiss region that made it subject to the Holy Roman Emperor alone. For most of this period, the lands today comprising Liechtenstein would be ruled by the Hohenstaufers, at one point a very major power contending for control over the new empire, but eventually reduced to various holdings across the empire. Not much of importance really happened to the territory during these few centuries, although it would become the site of one of the last witch trials in Europe, go figure. This era would also be the dawning of the dynasty Liechtensteins, who would, in time, become the rulers of the region. In a story shockingly similar to the Habsburgs, the name originally came from the Liechtenstein Castle in Lower Austria, which they had possessed from at least 1140 until the 13th century. The Liechtensteins would spend the next few centuries slowly building their dynastic possessions and acquiring land, predominantly in Moravia, Lower Austria, Silesia, and Styria. But their power and influence was capped somewhat by the nature of these lands. These territories were not really so much controlled as they were owned or rented, with all land held in feudal tenure for more senior feudal lords, usually the Habsburgs. This meant that, in essence, Liechtensteins were really closer to tenants than rulers, and thus the Liechtenstein dynasty was unable to meet a primary requirement to qualify for a seat in the imperial diet. Even though several Liechtenstein princes served several Habsburg rulers as close advisors, without any territory held directly from the imperial throne, they held little power in the Holy Roman Empire. For this reason, the family sought to acquire lands that would be classed as unmittelbar, or held without any intermediate feudal tenure, directly from the Holy Roman Emperor. During the early 17th century, Karl I of Liechtenstein was made a Fürst, or Prince, by the Holy Roman Emperor Matthias after siding with him in a political battle. With his newfound position, his son, Hans Adam I, was allowed to purchase the minuscule lordship of Schellenberg and County of Vaduz in 1699 and 1712, respectively. Tiny as Schellenberg and Vaduz might be, they had exactly the political status required. No feudal lord other than their communal sovereign and the emperor. And thus, the Liechtensteins were finally right up there with the big boys, if you ignore the fact that they ruled less than 10,000 people on the fringes of the massive Austrian Empire. But, hey, status is status. On the 23rd of January, 1719, after the lands had been purchased, Charles VI, Holy Roman Emperor, decreed that Vaduz and Schellenberg were united and elevated into a newly formed territory with the name Liechtenstein, given in honor of, quote, his true servant, Anton Florian of Liechtenstein. It was on this date that Liechtenstein became a sovereign member state of the Holy Roman Empire. It is a testament to the pure political expediency of the purchase that the princes of Liechtenstein did not visit their new principality for almost 100 years. We can only assume that instead the entire area was an anarcho-communist paradise. The period would also characterize one of the strange phenomena about Liechtenstein. It always seems to be about a century late to things, because just as they finally established themselves in the empire came crashing down. Now, our coverage of Switzerland split with the Holy Roman Empire before all of this went down, but for our purposes, the only real thing you need to know is that the whole idea of empire just degraded further and further as various powers within began consolidating their own territories outside the empire. The big change would come as a result of the French Revolution. As a result of the Napoleonic Wars in Europe, the Holy Roman Empire came under the effective control of France following the crushing defeat at Austerlitz in 1805. Emperor Francis II abdicated, ending more than 960 years of feudal government. Napoleon reorganized much of the empire, consolidating regions, replacing rulers, and annexing swaths of territory. This political restructuring had broad consequences for Liechtenstein, but probably not as you would expect, because instead of being replaced or toppled, Liechtenstein was, well, forgotten. As the historical, legal, and political institutions of the empire were dissolved, Liechtenstein was left alone, and thus the state now found itself without any obligation to feudal lords beyond its borders. Mostly by accident, Liechtenstein began its de facto independence. But de facto independence is not full independence. Its prince ceased to owe an obligation to any external lord, but it would be incorporated into the Confederation of the Rhine, a French vassal state ruled directly by Napoleon. Following the dissolution of the Confederation on the 19th of October, 1813, Liechtenstein would finally be granted full independence at the Congress of Vienna. Following this, Liechtenstein joined the German Confederation, something of a loose governing body of the remaining German states. In 1818, Prince Johann I, the Austrian in control of the Confederation, granted the territory a limited constitution. In that same year, Prince Alois became the first member of the House of Liechtenstein to set foot in the principality that bore their name. The next visit would not come until 1842. And what did Liechtenstein do with its newly won independence? Well, mostly fail to industrialize. Liechtenstein developed slowly and remained underdeveloped for many years. While similar circumstances caused most of Europe to go up in flames in the revolutions of 1848, Liechtenstein was not in a state to even be trying to overthrow itself. Remember, Liechtenstein is late to everything. Rather than political reform, the main economic relief came with a customs treaty with Austria in 1852. With their situation now improving, the people were in a position to demand more rights from their rulers. The 1862 Constitution brought about a degree of political change by placing restrictions on the prince's power to rule, which would be important if he ever actually decided to reside in the country. The next half century or so would see a series of strange and almost comical developments. This included the disbanding of the army for financial reasons in 1868, the National Bank founded just days after the importation of the first cotton weaving mill, and being the site of a railway line between Switzerland and Austria, but without any stops built in Liechtenstein. The major change that came as a result of this era was the dissolution of the German Confederation following the Austro-Prussian War of 1866. The next few decades were mostly stable, characterized by slow economic growth and, oh, what's that? Europe wants to light itself on fire again? Well, if they insist. Prior to World War I, Liechtenstein was closely tied first to the Austrian Empire and later to Austria-Hungary. The ruling princes continued to derive most of their wealth from estates in the Habsburg territories and spent most of the time at their two palaces in Vienna. There's a commonly referenced story during this time of a Liechtenstein army deployed with 80 men to patrol the border and having convinced an Italian to come back and join them, returning with 81. While this makes for a nice little story, the fact that half the sources claim it was actually an Austrian man during the Austro-Prussian War indicates that this might be slightly anachronistic. Following the conclusion of the war, the economic devastation brought upon Austria caused by the war forced the country to conclude a customs and monetary union with its other neighbor, Switzerland. This partnership would remain their main international diplomacy up until today. In 1929, 75-year-old Prince Franz I succeeded to the throne. He had just married Elisabeth von Guttmann, a wealthy woman from Vienna, whose father was a Jewish businessman from Moravia. Although Liechtenstein had no official Nazi party, a Nazi sympathy movement arose within its National Union Party. Local Liechtenstein Nazis identified Elisabeth as their Jewish problem, with the Jewish residents of the country mostly ignored. In March 1938, just after the annexation of Austria by Nazi Germany, France named as regent his 31-year-old grandnephew and heir presumptive, Prince Franz Joseph. France died in July that year, and Franz Joseph succeeded to the throne. Franz Joseph II became the first to permanently move to Liechtenstein in 1938, a few days after Austria's annexation. He would later meet with Hitler in person and convince him to recognize the nation's neutrality. How he pulled that one off, I don't know. During World War II, Liechtenstein remained officially neutral, looking to neighboring Switzerland for assistance and guidance, while family treasures from dynastic lands and possessions in Bohemia, Moravia, and Silesia were taken to Liechtenstein for safekeeping. At the close of the conflict, Czechoslovakia and Poland, acting to seize what they thought to be German possessions, expropriated the entirety of the Liechtenstein's dynasty's properties in those three regions. The expropriations, which are to this day subject to legal disputes at the International Court of Justice, included over 1,600 square kilometers of agricultural and forest land, as well as several family castles and palaces. Following the conclusion of the war, Liechtenstein
ended up with something of a refugee crisis when 500 white Russians sought asylum in their nation. The nation would later reject a personal request from Stalin to return them. Citizens of Liechtenstein were forbidden to enter Czechoslovakia during the Cold War. More recently, the diplomatic conflict revolving around the controversial post-war Benes decrees resulted in Liechtenstein not sharing international relations with the Czech Republic or Slovakia. Diplomatic relations were re-established between Liechtenstein and the Czech Republic on the 13th of July, 2009, and with Slovakia on the 9th of December. Liechtenstein was in dire financial straits following the end of the war in Europe. The Liechtenstein dynasty often resorted to selling family artistic treasures, including a portrait by Leonardo da Vinci, which was purchased by the National Gallery of Art of the United States in 1967 for $5 million, then a record price for a painting. By the late 1970s, Liechtenstein figured out a different path. It used its low corporate taxes to draw in many companies and became one of the wealthiest countries in the world. Because when you have nothing else going for you, become a tax haven. Currently, the Prince of Liechtenstein is the world's 8th wealthiest monarch and wealthiest in Europe, with an estimated wealth of $5 billion amassed from their sizable land holdings. Between these, the country's population enjoys one of the world's highest standards of living. Liechtenstein has a monarch as head of state and an elected parliament that enacts the law. It is also a direct democracy where voters can propose and enact constitutional amendments and legislation independently of the legislature. The reigning prince is the head of state and represents Liechtenstein in its international relations, although Switzerland has taken responsibility for much of Liechtenstein's diplomatic relations. The prince may veto laws adopted by parliament. The prince can also call referenda, propose new legislation, and dissolve parliament, although dissolution of parliament may be subject to a referendum. On the 1st of July, 1984, Liechtenstein became the last country in Europe to grant women the right to vote. The referendum on women's suffrage, in which only men were allowed to participate, passed with 51.3% in favor. In a national referendum in March 2003, nearly two-thirds of the electorate voted in support of Hans Adam II's proposed new constitution. This proposed constitution was criticized by many, including the Council of Europe, as expanding the powers of the monarchy, continuing the powers to veto any law, and allowing the prince to dismiss the government or any minister. The prince threatened that if the constitution failed, he would, among other things, convert some royal property for commercial use and move to Austria. The prince enjoys tremendous public support inside the nation, and the resolution passed with about 64% in favor. A proposal to revoke the prince's veto powers were rejected by 76% of voters in a 2012 referendum. Liechtenstein is one of the few countries in the world with more registered companies than citizens. It has developed a highly prosperous, highly industrialized, free enterprise economy that boasts a financial service sector as well as a living standard that compares favorably with those of the urban areas of Liechtenstein's much larger European neighbors. Liechtenstein participates in a customs union with Switzerland and employs the Swiss franc as the national currency. The country imports about 85% of its energy from them as well. Liechtenstein has been a member of the European Economic Area, a sort of EU light, since May 1995. In 2008, during an international recession, the unemployment rate stood at 1.5%. As of 2014, the CIA World Factbook estimated that the gross domestic product on a purchasing power parity basis to be $4.978 billion. Well, slightly less than the wealth of their head of state, that still gives them a GDP per capita of $139,000, about three times that of the United States. And for one final story, Airbnb briefly offered an ability to rent Liechtenstein for about $70,000 a night. Far from a fault of the system, this was an intentional posting by the government. Although the deal, as of August 2020, is no longer available, the entire country could be rented out. For a minimum of two nights, the entire country, which has a population of 75,000, could be rented. The Airbnb profile says Liechtenstein can accommodate between 450 and 900 people, has 500 plus bedrooms and 500 plus bathrooms. While there were talks of many actually signing up, nobody ever actually went through with the deal. So, in the end, what should we say about Liechtenstein? Well, above all else, it's a tremendously weird place. It was host to some of the last witch trials in Europe, centuries after most nations had phased out the practice. It is the result of a wealthy family needing to own land on a technicality, a family that would then spend nearly 200 years avoiding their new territory like the plague. It managed to win its independence mostly by accident, a result of a strange wording in treaties during the French Revolution. Its political and economic revolutions either stalled out or downright failed, leaving the country decades behind the rest of Europe. It maintained an army just long enough to be perhaps the only nation on Earth with a negative casualty rate. Its anti-Jewish sentiment was almost entirely focused on a single individual. Despite maintaining no army, the nation managed to push through demands against both Hitler and Stalin on separate occasions. It has some of the wealthiest leaders in the world as their heads of state, a result of land ownership that is now the site of intense international legal battles. The nation has been very slow in rolling out social and political reforms, and on some level seems to be trending more towards monarchy than away from it. It manages a tremendous amount of wealth by acting as a tax haven just on the edge of European regulation. It could reasonably be described as a vassal state to Switzerland, and yet is ingrained in the EU apparatus. Despite possessing a single ski area, the nation regularly wins Olympic medals in the sport. And just for good measure, it's the world's largest producer of fake teeth. I guess the only things that can be said about Liechtenstein is that it has used its unique position for unique results. Whether you think those results are good or bad, what can be said about Liechtenstein is that its citizens are wealthy and happy, the government is popular, and its sports are just good enough to occasionally make them interesting. Join me in 2 weeks when we launch into our next big country series. Until then, share the show, rate the show, subscribe to the show, send me emails at historylittleeurope@gmail.com, and until next time, pozegnanie, ciao, and goodbye.